This is the Slice of App Pie Show. I am Steve, your host, for some tips and tricks to help you become a successful creative indie. Ready for your slice? I want to start today with two stories. The first is about Grace Hopper. Many of you may have heard it already. Grace Hopper was attributed as is one of the people who invented COBOL, one of the first computer languages. She's also one of the people who invented the compiler. Most of the theoretical work started with her, actually. So, she worked for the Navy. She's actually a rear admiral, worked through World War II, and was quite the dynamic woman. There's the story goes around, I think it was the 1950s, that they were working on a computer program, and the entire system just shut down. They went to find out what was wrong, and they had found that a moth had found the glow of the vacuum tubes they used back then to be so entrancing, he flew into them, short-circuited the whole computer, and fried himself. Now, a moth is not a bug. However, it is from that story that we get the term a bug in the system. Something that essentially shuts down our program. We've changed the term a little bit to mean more that it's anything that goes wrong with the program. I was also thinking about another story that happens to me a lot. For the Make App Pie side of my business, I get this email saying, hey, this particular code in your blog about whatever doesn't work. And there's a mistake that doesn't seem to be fixed. Now, I run every single one of these, and so I am 100% sure that everything works. The only thing that doesn't work is when there's an update and Apple changes some syntax on me, and that screws up the code. So I run it, see if it works almost every time from my copies that I have here. And then usually I write back something like this. You didn't tell me what didn't work. You told me it didn't work, but do you have a better idea of why it doesn't work? Do you know what the bug is? Most of the people who do this probably don't have an idea of how to debug. I think most of the people, if I really did make an error, would probably fix it. I think most of the people listening to this who do programming would just sit down and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here, fix this. I do get every once in a while, it's very rare, I do get every once in a while the letter, hey, I've been working with this, and did you know that this was wrong? And here's what's going on, and here's what this. And about 90% of the time, yeah, they're right. There's 10% where they're actually looking at something differently than I am, and we can have some very interesting discussions about that, and I have. But the issue here is debugging. I don't think enough people do it. Debugging is not just a programming thing. It's a way of life. It's problem solving. It's a very special kind of problem solving because you look at the world differently than just saying, here's a problem, I'm going to solve it. And so let's look at debugging. Now, there are different types of debugging. There's different kinds of bugs, I should say. There's my bugs and there's not my bugs. The my bugs are the things that I do that would actually cause something to go wrong. The most classic one is a syntax error. For those of you who work in Objective-C or C or C++, a classic syntax error is forgetting a semicolon. You know, JavaScript, Java, all of those have syntax that requires certain extra end characters. Everybody makes that mistake. And that's a perfect example of a syntax error, where you write something out, you do something, and you do something knuckleheaded that it won't even compile. It won't even work. A lot of times, you know, if you're using something like Xcode, where you have a very smart editor compiler, it's going to catch it, and it's going to whine about it. And sometimes even, you know, in Swift, we get all kinds of things where it'll just whine like crazy because it just says, I don't like that. Even things that aren't really bugs, they're just sloppy. You'll find that that'll happen. Something like JavaScript, where we have a language that has no fancy compilers. It's run off the web browser itself. For those, you're usually going to find it out the hard way. and it's going to crash, it's not going to work, and it starts becoming a little more subtle. And many times that starts getting into the logical type of errors. And those are the ones where it'll work, but it works wrong. It's the ones where you don't get the expected results. Those are a little harder to find, but those exist. So you've got it working, but it's not, it's actually running, but it just doesn't do the right thing. You add 2 + 2 and get 7. The last one is actually in the design. There's two different kinds of design here as well. And one of those is the design of the for the user, is that your user interface is wrong. Now, people like Apple and Android as well have entire books, human interface guides, to try to help developers make sure that they are following certain design principles. And some people are like, oh, I don't want to use the HIG. It's not creative enough. And as I talked about in the blues, you know, those constraints are important. Those constraints actually help your creativity. But those just constraints have another reason, is that people work on things in certain ways. And the people who wrote those books, particularly the original HIG, are people who really know about this. There's actually a guy named Donald Norman who wrote a book called The Design of Everyday Things. And he was, I think he still is a consultant for Apple. And what his whole thing was the user interface. When Steve Jobs was still around, he went to the best. And I definitely suggest reading The Design of Everyday Things if you've never read anything about design. It is a classic. So the UI design issues. And a lot of times, you can tell a crappy programmer real easy. I mean, everyone's had them. A lot of times the buttons are in the wrong place. I hear a lot of people say, hey, can I do this? And I look at it and say, that's just bad UI. I mean, yes, it's from an engineering point of view, probably makes it easier for you as a programmer, for you as an engineer, but it's absolutely a crappy user experience. So those are one kind of error. The other kind of error is the program design error. A lot of times we can get rid of the bugs, particularly the logical ones. A lot of them can disappear when you're designing in the first place. We'll be talking actually at Make App Pi about databases. And we're going to talk a lot more about databases in the weeks to come. And here's a classic error, is you download an entire database to get one file. That means that you're going to have a huge design error, that it's going to take forever on a large database to catch one record instead of just downloading the one record. Big difference in time. Those kinds of errors are what I'm calling design errors. And a lot of times you can design the bugs out early before you've even coded. And it's something a lot of people don't do and don't sit down to do. I tend to do the play thing first, and hopefully in my play I start noticing everything. Then when I put it together, I start designing from that point so that the code that I'm doing will be running as leanly as possible. Then there's the not my bugs. And these are things you have to think about too. Some of these, again, go back to design as well. The first one is the data error. Is the error that you're going to get from the data you're reading. Not all data is going to be pristine. Not all data is going to be come in exactly the way that you expect it to, at the time you want it to, or it's even there. So you've got to do the extra work to make sure that your models, your data that's coming in from, say, the web, is actually good data. And what to do when it's not good data. And you have to think that out, because that could be a bug as well. Those are the kinds of bugs that really crash the system badly or make something look really ugly. Then there's user error, which is a lot. It's very similar to data error. And many times data error and user error are hand in hand. You find that a user puts in data wrong, or puts in illegal characters, or breaks the rules of how to put in data, and that ends up as bad data. Again, that's something you can design out. If you make a user interface that makes it near impossible for a user to commit an error, that's much better. It's not always possible, but it's much better. Classic examples of that is to use a button instead of a text field. or a segmented field or a radio button, those kinds of buttons force a user interaction that's very easy for them to see. Those are the kinds of things I'm talking about here. Is that kind of design many times helps. And then there's my favorite, which if you've heard me on Make App Pie, if you've seen me on Make App Pie, you know that I get a little cranky about other people's libraries. I'm a big believer to keep things as lean as you can in your code. I'm a big believer in doing it all yourself. A lot of people will go with the don't reinvent the wheel. My problem is I don't know it's a wheel. And that's simply my usual answer to the question that I get a lot of times. Oh, why don't you use my third-party free thing on GitHub to do X? If someone gives you something free, a lot of times, you have to look to make sure that it's a legitimate thing or something that's too good to be true. You got to make sure it's legitimate. And the same thing is true of code. I have to then go ahead and validate that code. I have to go through every line of that code to make sure it works the way that I need it to work. And in some of the applications that I do, I'm obligated by government agencies to check every line of code. So by the time I'm checking every line of code, I might as well write it specifically for me instead of having someone else's thing, having it adapted for my particular project and understanding how to use it. At that point, it's easier to write the code. So a lot of times, and I won't say all the time, but a lot of times, I find that the easiest way to get rid of that of a third-party bug is not have the bug. It's not have the third-party software. That's also true, of course, with Apple itself. And I already mentioned the most common of those. Apple changes Xcode all the time. And by Xcode, I mean the two languages, Objective-C and Swift, changes the code and the language constantly. Swift even more than Objective-C right now. Doing so means that I have to change my code all the time. And all of that updating and making things fresh, and sometimes it's even in Interface Builder as I'm building the interface, all that means that I have to go through iterations because I'll get bugs every time Worldwide Developers Conference comes around and there's an upgrade to Xcode. So, yeah. I'm writing this a week before Worldwide Developers Conference, and I'm just dreading next week because I know I've got a ton of those coming my way. So what do we mean when we say a bug? What do we mean when we say it's wrong? There's two things that we mean here, and I've already told you both of them, really. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do. We have a target. You know, many people actually write out what a program's function is, a program statement, design document, things like that. And it says exactly what it's supposed to do. And it doesn't do that. It may not work at all. It may give the wrong answer. It may just not look right. All of those things go in that category. The second category of bugs is it does what it's supposed to do, but does it in an unacceptable way. Now, the classic one of those is going to be a memory leak, or a memory hog for that matter as well. Both memory leaks and memory hogs are places where you have the iPhone, the mobile device, taking too much memory for one reason or another that it really doesn't need to take. And it's crowding out all the other systems. It's slowing down what you're doing. You know, slow performance is also another unacceptable thing, very often related to those two. Those kinds of things are also bugs. So how do you handle all these? Well, here's what I tend to do. First thing I do is I test. Is I take the program and I run it. Many times I take a module and I run it. Many times I take a class. I'll go down as far as a function. And you test each one individually to make sure that it works. And then you build them all back up to make sure that they work all together. And so you're doing that up and down, essentially, the big tree that is your application. So I test the methods, I test the modules, I test the program. And I find the bugs. And as I go through each one of these and I find a bug, I find out why. And there's lots of different ways that you can find out why. I usually break them down into two major ones for the doesn't do what it's supposed to do type. And that is using something like a print, a write, an NS log, a statement in my code that tells me what's going on right now. The second one I use is breakpoints. Now, breakpoints can actually be used for the first one, but only if you know exactly this is the point that I need to test this. It's not as easy to use in many cases as the print write and a slog type of thing. So I tend to run one with the prints, and as the application is running, I can see that certain things are changing the way that they're supposed to change. And if they're not, I know I have to maybe put a couple more of these in there and see where is that happening that it's not doing it right. The second one, breakpoints, I often use breakpoints to see how my execution is doing. So I have a program. It's running step by step. It should go to step 7. If it goes to step 6 and then it goes to step 8, there's a reason it didn't go to step 7. So if I stick it at step 7 and the program keeps running and never hits my breakpoint, I know there's something wrong that's causing that not to happen. And that's where I tend to use it, is to see the flow of execution. And that's how I use that. So I look at the flow of execution. I look at my values using the prints and writes. At a breakpoint, many times I'll actually look at the values themselves, which on many of the debuggers you can do that. But those are the two that I tend to use the most. And that's really old school programming. I've done that since the time of punch cards in one way or another. And then once I find the bugs, and once I can then say, oh, this is why there's a bug, and it's a very important process. Finding the bug, finding why the bug, helps solve the problems of the bug. I can then go ahead and do the next step. Let's fix it. And 90% of the time, you know what? I made a simple mistake. I put a plus instead of a minus. And that's the kind of knuckleheaded thing that happens to everybody. 90% of the time, it's something simple, something really silly. You fix it. Sometimes it's a little more complex, and you have to fix those too. It may mean changing your entire code. It can get to that point. Many times on the memory leaks, you may need to do some rewriting to get the memory leaks out. And then you know what? You do it again. Because your fixes may probably have included new bugs. There's always one more bug. That's one of my favorite rules. You got to remember that, is that there's always one more bug. Now, that was all pretty technical. I want to point out a couple important lessons, both in programming and in life, that debugging bring out. Number one, you got to be Sherlock Holmes. It's no good just saying it doesn't work. You've got to do the detective work to find out why it doesn't work. Way too many people say it doesn't work. And it works just as much in the user side of things as I do find in the programmer things. Programmers I expect more of because they have to debug. But it always bothers me that I don't have people do what I do when I talk to a technical support person and say, okay, here's all the things I tried, here's all the results I had, and I send all of that to the tech support people. And most of them are probably too dense to figure out what I'm talking about, but if I get someone who knows their system well, they go, oh, good. First of all, I know I have someone I can talk to and get a good answer out of them. And second of all, he's already tried all this stuff. And, you know, that's good. I mean, it's being Sherlock Holmes. It's doing the footwork and doing the detective work before you go anywhere else. Number two is owning your own mistakes. And this is something that I know a lot of people have a lot of problems with out in the world. It goes back to fear and failure again. And that is saying, okay, I made a mistake. In debugging, you have to do that and say, no, this isn't, I can't just say it's the compiler's fault. Every single time, oh, it's Apple has a bug. That doesn't work. That's going to get you absolutely nothing developed because you're always going to do something wrong. If you blame Apple, it's not going to get anywhere. And it's true of life too. I can't say it's always somebody else's mistake. If I make a mistake, I say, okay, I made a mistake. Those are the easy ones because if it's your mistake, you can fix it. You have control over it, and you can fix it. The other side of that is, if you make a mistake, laugh at it. Don't take it too seriously. Say, oh gosh, I can't believe I made that dumb mistake. You know, a minus and a plus. You know, you add it and so you subtract it. Those things happen. You put the wrong number down. It happens. And just say, oh gosh, I can't believe I made that one this time. If it's not your mistake, work around it the best way possible. There's always solutions. And there's always workarounds. Sometimes the people who may have made that bug, I know Apple's pretty good with this in some of the beta versions, is they give you workarounds as they do the developer releases. That's a good way. A lot of times you just figure it out yourself and you start playing. It goes back to play again. You start playing with it and figure out, oh, there might be a little hack to get there. I don't like hacks because it really does start messing up code, but many times they're necessary. They're necessary because we don't have any other solutions. When a solution comes along, you may want to replace your hack with the true solution. But a lot of times people just go straight for the hack, which is also a problem. Try to keep to a good solution for your problems. A lot of times they really do exist if you look hard enough. Goes back to Sherlock Holmes again. Design so there's no mistakes. Think ahead. Don't just plop something down and say, okay, I have this wonderful program for doing X, and just go ahead and write it without thinking out all the really important bits, without writing a specification of what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, what it's going to look like. Doing a little testing ahead of time to make sure that your users are going to like it, both from an attractive point that when they see it in the app store, they want to buy it, and from the point of view that when they're sitting and using it, they can actually use it. It's, you know, apps are too cheap. People can throw them out very easily. And if people continue to use them, then they'll continue to tell other people that they're using them. If they use it once and throw it out, they'll never tell anybody, and your app will never go anywhere. Think like a user, not an engineer. What is your user experience going to be? If one of the things that Apple has been the best at and the pioneer at, it may not be writing computer languages or writing operating systems. It's thinking like a user. It's having the user go, wow. Perfect is not the goal. There's always going to be one more bug. So you can't get perfect. At some point, go ahead and ship. Find what's known as the minimal viable product. It works really well. You don't throw in other features that you just say at the last minute, oh, I really need to throw in a feature. In many ways, I find feature creep a bug itself. Look at that document you wrote, that design document, and say, this is what I said I was going to do. When you hit the point where everything works at that point, ship. That's all you needed to do. There's always new versions if you want to add stuff later. Otherwise, you'll never ship. And it creates a little bit of paradox because we want to wow our customers. You have one side that says ship at a minimal viable product and one that says ship when it's a wow. And they're both true. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. I hope that helps some people who haven't really thought out enough about the way of debugging. Because I find that I don't just use this as computer stuff, even though I've talked about it in terms of programming. It's how I deal with everything. And some people go nuts with me because they don't understand that that's how I look at things. Is I look at things as a debugging situation. I do the diagnostics with prints and breakpoints, even in life. I then fix the problem. I see everything as a fixable problem. If it's not a fixable problem, then I'm going to find a workaround because it's something that I just can't fix. Next week, we're going to have our last episode of the season. It's going to be an interesting one because I'm going to talk a lot about this podcast. So I'm going to go a little meta on you. But I'm also going to talk about something that you're going to really have to deal with in your own enterprises. It's how success works. That you're not always in success and you're not always in failure. So, till next week, have a great and glorious time, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Slice of App Pie. Please subscribe and leave a rating on iTunes. You can also find out more about today's episode in the show notes at sliceofapppie.com. Have a great and glorious day. Talk to you later.